Good evening, everyone. My name is Sitheni Lea, and welcome to this week's edition of Health Matters. Yes, it's Pinktober. And as we did it last week, we're doing it again today, and we're going to be doing it the whole month of October, celebrating the winners, the women who've done it, the men who've done it. And yeah, hopefully next week, we actually have Mr. Bo Poto on the show to tell us. Because I know a lot of people don't actually know that men can also be affected by breast cancer. But anyway, we're not about sad stories this time. I had the privilege of meeting a young lady, Constance. That was May, I think, this year. And we got talking. And sometime last weekend, as I was looking for my winners, I actually sent a message to ask if she was in Harare. She told me she's in Hwange, where she works. And lo and behold, I come to Bulawayo and we bump into each other. So I'm grateful to God for this connection. And welcome to the show, Constance.
Isis, thank you very much. And yeah, we need to just give all the praise and honor to the Lord. He made this possible.
Yes.
He set it up for us.
Yes. So first things first, Constance, as we are celebrating winners, we have to start at the beginning. How was the journey for you?
The journey is tough. Best I can say to anybody and everyone out there, the journey itself is tough. But one thing is, with faith, everything works out. And for me, I just say, it's all grace. It's nothing to do with me. It's all grace.
Okay. And as somebody who was already in the corporate world, how did you find the work balance and looking after your health after your diagnosis?
I'm lucky. I've got a supportive team. And I think my bosses just decided to walk with me. My workload did not change, definitely. My office is a busy office, but they were there to offer support. My team, my immediate team, my subordinates and the people around me also rallied with me, and they took certain responsibilities away from me, especially the first 3 days when you go in for your chemo and you come out and everything is just going wrong. For those 3 days, I only had to field what was important. My team just took everything upon themselves. Funny enough, I work in the coal industry in Hwange, and it's extremely hot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a geologist. I have to work in the sun. So you can imagine the combination of chemo drug.
Chemo takes like 21 days to get out of your system.
And my cycle was 21 days. Every 21 days, I have to do it.
Wow.
But every 10th day, I would fly back to Hwange and be at work. I only went into the field in the early hours of the day. After 10, I was in the office. If I needed anything done, I worked over the phone. My team did the field work.
Yeah, and when we spoke earlier in the year, one of the most remarkable things that I took away from you was the fact that you had a journey to walk with finding the right doctor. And I remember the thing that I took away was your spirit saying no, and you actually went on the journey even further. So how did that go?
That was a very interesting one. And I think my mom was the one who said, whenever you walk into a room, if your spirit is not comfortable, that's not your place. And that helped me in trying to pick the best oncologist to work with. First time I was referred to somebody who's young, almost my age. We had treated a close friend's wife, and they said, you will get along with this doctor. I went to their rooms, but something just did not sit well. I never got to meet the doctor, but just their space, their rooms and their reception, and it just did not sit well with me. I left. I went to one of the world-renowned oncologists, and I got there, and same vibes came at me. So I decided, let me go home and leave it. This all happened in the space of 2-3 days. And as I was driving from town, I just saw a certain post, and I turned and I drove there, and I got there, and I was at peace. I was at peace, and coincidentally, I did not need to make an appointment to see the oncologist. I was just asked, "We'll just sit here. We'll go and tell the oncologist and see if they're okay." Somebody comes back and says, "Doc says, are you okay with just sitting here? She still has one patient, and then you can see them." And I said, "Not a problem." By the time I left that room, I already had an appointment for the next steps. So I like I said, it's more about grace, and it's more about you just handing everything and saying, "Lead the way." Well, whoever you are, lead the way. I know we believe in different things, but whatever you believe in, hold on to that and let it lead you. And that's my story.
Yeah, and looking at your story and finally, like, getting the diagnosis, how did you get to that point?
I noticed a lump. Mm-hmm. But it was just one of those. I was never one who did your normal checks and all. So this thing just came out of the blues, and you have something, and it keeps irritating you. For me, it was more the irritation, not even the thought, but it was just an irritation of this little lump that's sitting there that I can't understand. So I went and got it scanned. Story, it's a long story. Got misdiagnosis twice. But something in the end kept persisting and saying, no, let's get to the bottom of this. And it's interesting. It was just a tiny little thing. But when they did do the biopsy and the pathology test and everything, it then turns out to be stage 3B. And I had no pain whatsoever. It was just that little lump, and it was a very small lump. So, yeah. It's one of those, but
yeah. And stage 3, you know, a lot of people get skeptical and get worried about this numbers and stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, and there's a B in front. And you are told this. How did you take it?
First instance, immediately after being told, obviously, I now need to plan for my death. That was the first thought. So what's going to happen? I've got a child. She's about to write her O levels. So if I'm to die today, what's going to happen to her? I'm a single parent, by the way. And you then now start processing. You look at everybody else around you. Do I plan the funeral? Do I tell them what it is that I want? But immediately after that, for me, same day I got my diagnosis, my youngest sister gave birth. So I then asked myself, amidst the tears, the anger and everything, I then asked myself, do I want this little child to grow up with the stigma to say on his birthday is the day that my guru also got this diagnosis and it was the end of her life? I told myself, no, I picked myself up. And
that
from there, that same day, I told myself, I am going to fight this. It wasn't easy. You know, it's you relapse one day, it's anger, the next day it's pain, the third day it's crying, the next day it's the fighting spirit. So it's a roller coaster of emotions. But by the time I got to day 15 and had done all the crying, had done all the praying, and I should say, only 3 people knew
at that point.
I was the fourth. For those first 15 days, it was just the 4 of us. And I'm doing my own research. These guys are telling me. And it was like a battle. But by day 15, I knew I'm not going. I don't want to die. I want to live. And the fight started from then. Up to today, I see people and I tell them, just fight.
And looking at your numbers, 4 people, 4 including you. How was your support system? How did they help you go through this journey?
Those first 15 days, these guys, all of them are in the medical fraternity. So it was more me asking, what with this diagnosis, what do we do? How do we proceed? What are my options? And getting the medical side. And then I then also had to do my own research to say, look, the alternatives, what are they? What's there on the table? And they were there for me, that I should hand to them. They were there for me. They gave me all the information and they gave me the support I needed. Then thereafter, I decided I was not going to tell everybody. I told my immediate family and a couple of my closest friends and one or two others. And that was it. I swore them to secrecy and told them, we fight this. I know they went to other people, but they did it without giving out my name, to just say, we've got somebody who needs prayers. We've got somebody who needs support, and that was, it helped. And I have a group of sisters, my former schoolmates, especially people from my class. Some of them did not even know what I was going through, but because a call had just been made to say one of us is fighting, up to today, they have become not just former classmates, but their sisters, because in their own way, they gave support to and somebody we had no face, but they just knew it's a sister who needs us. They came through for me. There's St. Dominic's girls, former St. Dominic's girls. You girls are a force to reckon with, and I take my hat off to you. And I have learned to pass it on like you asked me to. I pass it on.
Well, I guess St. Dominic's is quite remarkable, because I've actually made quite several number of them over the past year plus. Mm-hmm. And yes, kudos to them. And some of them are even in the UK. There's Carol. Yes. Yeah, there's quite a number of Carols from St. Dominic's. Mm-hmm. I don't know which year you were in there, but yeah. But then now, one thing that I also come to respect about you is your advocacy and speaking to people that, you know, are fighting with the battle right now, mm-hmm. trying to push them to understand that you can win. Mm-hmm. What makes you do that?
Look, there were people that also pushed me. When we went for the chemo sessions, you would meet people. Others would tell you, look, for me, I know I am now on palliative care, but I still need somebody to speak and let the other generations know that this thing, early detection, will do the trick for them. So I just picked up from there and to say, is the same way that those guys were there for me and telling me to fight, I also need to make sure somebody else that's out there knows that you can fight this. And we pick up their spirit and we walk with them and teach them. Some people have put down their gloves already the day they get their positive result, but we need them to pick up those gloves, get there and out there into the ring, fight this. It can be fought. I stand here, God help me, in the community, that village that we talk about was there for me. So that's what pushes me. If we can get one more person to fight, that's it. That's all we need.
Okay. And just before we close down, what message do you want to, would you tell your younger self today?
My younger self, number one, the medical checkups are important. Just continuously checking yourself and also just going for your annual medical examinations, also doing your mamas. I know we continue telling ourselves, no, ndeje varungu, ndeje, but well, let's do it. Let's do it. It will help us. And one more thing, my younger self, listen, keep the words of the elders, those wise words. That came back when I needed it. And up to today, I say thank you to young Connie for having listened to those words that you kept being told, that you can always fight and listen to what your body tells you, what your conscience tells you, what your spirit tells you. So kudos to young Connie. I respect her.
Okay, and besides speaking engagements and all, what do you push for as well? And the spirit of Pinktober.
Pinktober. At work, I have, they know, come throughout the year. It's not just October. Whenever I get a chance to talk about cancer and to talk about health, I take the floor and run with it. In my community, whatever event I am given, whatever chance I'm given, whatever topic I'm talking about, I always close off advocating for cancer. So I hope this message continues. We don't just keep it during Pinktober, but let's take it out there every single day. Let's save lives.
Thank you.
Zimbabwe's finest radio. ZFM Stereo.
Thank you once again for joining us. My name is Siten Inlea, and this is Health Matters. In the first half of this episode, we spoke to Constance Reed, and she's a survivor, she's a winner, and she's making it happen. And right now, we're going to focus as well on other people who've won the battle against this disease. And I had a chance to talk to Ms. Dabo Poto, who is a breast cancer survivor. And it is all wins in this Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And also, the other person who contributed to our conversation is Miss Kathy Chikowe, who also works with Second Chances. And they are going to actually host an event on the 11th of September as Pink October continues riding on the importance of a psychological empowerment, psychological help, and you know, just having that great mindset to be in a good space even with your diagnosis. And so we're going to listen to some of the views and opinions that they've shared over the issue of breast cancer, Pink October, and winning ways.
My name is Itai Mabasabo Poto, a business economist by profession. I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2018. I'm a male breast cancer survivor. Although breast cancer is very rare in men, I would strongly urge some men to go for breast cancer tests, especially those that fall under the following conditions: heredity, genetic. When any or your grandparents, parents, or your blood relatives develop a lump around the breast, go for test immediately. If any of your blood relatives developed a wound around the breast that never healed, go for a test immediately. I guess I've survived for a purpose. Most importantly, to save lives and contribute to the reduction of deaths associated with the breast cancer. To achieve this objective, I've written a book, A Rare Tale of Breast Cancer in Men. The book is on Amazon. Just type Itai Mabasabo Poto and the title of the book on Amazon. I repeat, the title is A Rare Tale of Breast Cancer in Men. Please spread the word and save lives. If you want more details, get in touch with me on my cell phone, 077-973-8426, or my email, iambopoto1951@gmail.com.
The 11th of October, 2025, all roads lead to Well Woman Clinic. Issues that relate to mental health and psychosocial support are key to cancer survivorship. We at Second Chance and our partners, other health professionals, and Well Woman Clinic are going to host an event where diverse people are going to meet, unpack the issues that relate to psychosocial support and mental health, and share experiences. Survivors sharing their experiences on their journeys with cancer and the benefits of psychosocial support on their mental health. Caregivers will share their experiences, the benefits of psychosocial support on their mental health. Many thanks to our partner, Well Woman Clinic, for hosting us on this very special day, 11th October 2025, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Let's meet and unpack. Support is essential. Together as a community, we'll win our fight against cancer. Second Chance Trust focuses on psychosocial support. You can get in touch with us on 0773-375-029. I repeat, Second Chance Trust, 0773-375-029. I wish you well, and let's continue to work together in our fight against cancer. Second Chance, as a partner, is there to complement the efforts of the Ministry of Health in the fight against cancer. We continue the journey of the fight against cancer. Let's all share information on cancer prevention, cancer survivorship, and good health seeking behavior. By so doing, we are taking our own part of offering ourselves to assist the efforts of the Ministry of Health and the Government of Zimbabwe.
Hello, my name is Sylvia Sanyanga. I'm the co-founder and director of the NAIDS Foundation, an organization that supports children with Fanconi anemia and related cancers. I'm also happy to share that I'm a board member of Second Chance Trust, an amazing organization that supports cancer patients through their various stages of treatment. Cancer for me is something that's very, very close to my heart, because I have 2 out of 3 of my children who have Fanconi anemia, a blood disorder with a predisposition to cancer. My children experienced bone marrow failure very early in their lives, and they had to undergo bone marrow transplants. A transplant is something so difficult to go through, and I remember having them get treatment for close to 6 months in a foreign country. What that meant is that I, as a caregiver, had to be with them throughout their treatment. And my personal experience with caregiving is that at times you end up being the patient. Everybody focused on the patient. And to be fair, that's what's important, right? The patient needed medical attention. My children, especially my youngest son, Nathan, had a difficult transplant. He was bleeding 20 times a day. And he was just passing this blood as clots. And guess who had to change Nathan? I did. Guess who had to make sure he had his meds on time? I did. Guess who had to wake up and make sure at any point in time Nathan had whatever he needed? I did. I did this with the support of my husband and a few family members that came through to support us. But what does this look like for a mother who is already going through the heartache and pain of knowing that their child has a very difficult illness that is life-threatening and may possibly result in death? Already they're going through emotional trauma. They're already going through emotional trauma. And then there's the physical trauma that the body takes. My child was 4 years old. He was very poorly, and he wasn't able to get up and go to the washroom or at least bathe himself. And so that was borne on me to do. I know a lot of cancer patients go through the same thing when they become too weak to do anything else. And when they start experiencing the side effects of cancer, they need a lot of support, some of it emotional, some of it physical. And the brunt is on those who take care of them. But who's taking care of the caregiver? Who is giving them emotional support? Who is making sure that the caregiver too has eaten? Who's making sure that if this caregiver, for some reason or the other, ends up having health issues, they're taken care of as well? Caregivers sometimes are forgotten. And today, I would like to appeal to everybody who knows that they have somebody who has a chronic condition, and particularly those that are suffering from cancer. I hope and pray that you'll be able to remember to take care of the caregiver too. It could be a church. Instead of this caregiver serving meals or cooking for one day or having to clean up, take duties to prepare a meal or to come and help with laundry or whatever you may be able to help with. A lot of times people assume that a caregiver needs support financially, but no, sometimes they just want somebody who'll sit and say, you know what, for the next 4 hours, I'm going to take care of the patient. You go and have a life, lie down, or go out and do one thing that you love doing or that you miss doing, and then come back refreshed and in a better position to take care of this patient. Although it sounds cliche, people say you cannot pour from an empty cup. And I completely agree. Sometimes as a caregiver, you are spent emotionally, physically. And here's hoping that as we take care of our patients, we remember from now on to take care of the caregiver. That caregiver needs you too. I want to salute all the caregivers who do amazing work.
This has been Health Matters. My name is Sitene Nlea, and do come through on Saturday, the 11th of October, and have a place where you can get checked. It's a wellness day focusing on the win and the fight against breast cancer. My name is Sitene Nlea, and this has been this week's edition of Health Matters. Join us again next week, and we look into another commemoration that is held within the month of October, and that is pregnancy and infancy loss. And I know somebody, almost everybody knows somebody who has gone through a miscarriage, had a stillbirth, lost a baby in the early stages, and so many other tragedies surrounding a pregnancy. And hopefully you join us. But as we progress through the week, make sure you show kindness, show love, and take good care of yourself. And again, early detection, early detection, early detection saves lives.